Well, we're going to be looking at Habakkuk this morning, so you might want to go ahead and start turning there. It's going to take a little while probably to find it hidden at the end of the Old Testament amongst the minor prophets. It's only three chapters, so it's easy to pass over. So it is right after Nahum and right before Zephaniah. Back in the early 1900s, things were looking pretty good. The Wright brothers had figured out how to fly, and vehicles were starting to move a lot quicker. People were able to move from place to place without too many issues, and it seemed like technology was going to take care of a lot of the problems that people faced. And then in the 1910s, it wasn't too long after that that just one assassination led to the Great War, which we probably know more commonly as World War I, where millions of people were killed. By the time the United States entered the war, around 1917, there were already 15 million dead from the impact of that war. About 9 million troops and about 6 million civilians had already been killed by that point. A lot of people probably felt like the situation was getting pretty hopeless. The German troops and the British and French troops were locked into trench warfare, sending mustard gas on each other and all kinds of horrible weapons that had never been seen before. And people were dying by the hundreds of thousands. It was a pretty horrible situation, and it came, it seemed like, out of nowhere to these people. In the United States, people had just been living life, progressing through a lot of the new technology and inventions that had been built. And they were probably quite surprised when they found out that many of their sons were going to have to go over to Europe to fight in this war that seemed like it had little impact on them at the time. Sometimes in our lives, we probably face difficulty as well that just seems to come out of nowhere. We think we're, you know, trying to serve the Lord, and we're trying to follow Him and trust Him, and yet out of that, something difficult arises. It may be something as simple as just having a really bad day. You're at work or in school. Something just goes really wrong, something you didn't want to happen. Or perhaps a struggle with a disease that is ongoing, or just another trial that the Lord just withholds something from you that you feel like you really desire that, and you just can't have it. Habakkuk gives us an answer to how we can respond to a lot of the difficulties in life that we face. And as we look at the end of Habakkuk, we'll be looking at the three verses at the end primarily as our focus, but we'll look through the whole book to get some of the context. As I started to look at these verses, I realized that you really need to understand where Habakkuk was coming from and what had happened in the history at that point and also in his own life to really understand what these verses mean. But beginning in verse 17, Habakkuk writes, "Though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, and the field yields no food. The flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. God, the Lord, is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on my high places." And then there's this ending here to the choir master with stringed instruments. This was a song that was written in response to all that Habakkuk had learned in this book. As we look at the prophets, most of the time, you have a prophet getting a message from God and delivering it to the people. But Habakkuk is unique in the fact that in this book, he's actually talking to God, he's questioning what God has said, and God is responding and talking to him. It's similar in some ways to the book of Job, but from a different time period. So beginning at the very beginning of Habakkuk gives us some of the context of what's going on. If you just look briefly over the headings that you probably have in your Bible, it starts off in the first section there with Habakkuk's complaint, and then the Lord responds, and then you may have it labeled as Habakkuk's second complaint, So Habakkuk's response to what the Lord said, and then a response of the Lord saying, the righteous shall live by his faith, and then also, woe to the Chaldeans there in my Bible, is the same part, is God's response to him all the way through the end of chapter 2. So you have two complaints and then two responses from the Lord. And I think really for us to understand what Habakkuk is saying in verse 17, where he says, if everything goes wrong, everything that I've planned or hoped for goes wrong, yet I'm still going to respond to God by rejoicing in him, that you have to look through these chapters at the beginning to really understand that. And so in verse 17, we can see that God allows his people to face difficulty. But if we go back to look at Habakkuk's complaints, we see that most of the time when we face difficulty, it appears unjust to us. Now, that's assuming something. That's assuming that we are really trying to follow the Lord and we're attempting to live for him. There are times in our lives, of course, where we are away from the Lord. We're not pursuing him. We're kind of going off on our own for whatever reason. We are not attempting to even get to know him better and walk in relationship with him, and we're not confessing sin. So that's not the situation we're really addressing in this case. In this case, Habakkuk is talking about when you are trying to follow the Lord, when you're walking with him, you're not perfect, but confessing sin as it comes to your mind, and yet still you face difficulty in your life. And Habakkuk's context is he was coming up to the time when the Babylonians were going to overthrow the Assyrians. So the Assyrians had conquered the northern section of Israel, and Judah was still not in captivity yet. But the Babylonians were starting on the eastern side and moving west, and they were going to take over the Assyrians and then conquer the people of Judah. But before you get to that section, the first few verses here where it says, Habakkuk complains, he says, O Lord, how long shall I cry for help, and you will not hear, or cry to you violence, and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity, and why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law is paralyzed, and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surround the righteous, so justice goes forth perverted. It appears very likely that these verses are actually talking about the leaders of Judah that were causing the people to go away from God. And yet there's still some righteous among the people of Judah that are seeking to pursue the Lord and live for him, but they're being surrounded and punished by these people who aren't following the Lord. So this would be in the late 600s BC. So the captivity happened in 586 BC. So that's about there's about 25 years until the captivity is going to happen. And so God is going to respond with the prophecy of what is going to happen to these people because of their wickedness. So Habakkuk complains and says, this seems unjust. Why, God, are you not dealing with this issue of these people that are dealing with the righteous and hurting them? He's saying the law is paralyzed. You know, God's given a law that has to be followed, and the leaders are not following that law. Instead, they're punishing the righteous, and the righteous are suffering because of it. So this is what God says in response to him. He says, to look among the nations and see, wonder and be astounded, for I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe if told. So he's about to say something that just isn't going to make sense to Habakkuk if he explains it. And that's why Habakkuk has a second complaint, is because as he's talking with God and God tells him what's going to happen, he says, that doesn't make any sense to me. I don't understand how your plan could be working that way. In verse 6, it says, for behold, I am raising up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, who march through the breadth of the earth to seize dwellings not their own. They are dreaded and fearsome. Their justice and dignity go forth from themselves. Their horses are swifter than leopards, more fierce than the evening wolves. Their horsemen press proudly on. Their horsemen come from afar. They fly like an eagle swift to devour. They all come for violence, all their faces forward. They gather captives like sand. At kings they scoff, and at rulers they laugh. They laugh at every fortress, for they pile up earth and take it. Then they sweep by like the wind and go on, guilty men whose own might is their God. So as we see this description of the Chaldeans, that's the Babylonians that are going to come and sweep over the Assyrians and Israel and take Judah captive as well. This is not a description of someone coming that we would think of as God's judgment. This is not someone who's righteous, who's judging the nations that are not following him. This is someone more wicked. This is a nation more wicked than the nations before. And yet God is using them to judge even his own people, amongst whom there are some who are actually righteous and trying to do what's right. And so God is always just in what he does, but we don't always understand that and what's going on. And so then Habakkuk responds in verse 12. He says, "Are you not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, my Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, you have ordained them as a judgment, and you, O rock, have established them for reproof. You who are of purer eyes than to see evil and cannot look at wrong, why do you idly look at traitors and remain silent when the wicked swallows up the man more righteous than he? You make mankind like the fish of the sea, like crawling things that have no ruler. He brings all of them up with a hook. He drags them out with his net. He gathers them in his dragnet. So he rejoices and is glad. Therefore he sacrifices to his net and makes offerings to his dragnet, for by them he lives in luxury, and his food is rich. Is he then to keep on emptying his net and mercilessly killing nations forever? I will take my stand at my watchpost and station myself on the tower and look out to see what he will say to me and what I will answer concerning my complaint." So Habakkuk is saying, I had this complaint that the wicked are judging the righteous amongst my own people in Judah. And God responds by saying, I'm going to get someone more wicked and I'm going to destroy more nations and judge the people more with someone even more wicked. And Habakkuk says, that doesn't make any sense to me. Why are you doing this? Why are you making it even worse by having a more wicked person come and judge these righteous people, the few that are the remnant that remains there? These people that are idolaters, they make sacrifices to their net. Basically, he's saying they're worshiping the strength that they have and the military might. They're not worshiping the one true God. How could you allow this to happen, this injustice that is happening? And this is where the Lord comes and answers him. And Habakkuk says, I'm going to stand at my watchpost, like someone standing on a tower that's watching out for a city, waiting to see what's going to happen. And so he's waiting there to see what is God going to say in response to him. And this is very interesting because we find some verses here that are used in the New Testament for us to understand how we are to live as righteous people, not in our own righteousness, but with the righteousness that Christ provides. And so we see this section here called "The Righteous Shall Live by His Faith." I'm sure many of you have heard that in reference to Martin Luther and his understanding of the fact that faith is necessary in order to be saved. We cannot have our own righteousness. We have to have the righteousness of Christ. And so this is where it appears first in God's answer to Habakkuk and how he's to respond to what appears to be such great injustice here. So God responds by saying that one day all of these things will be made right, and that's what he needs to trust in. So he says that the Lord answered me, "Write the vision, make it plain on tablets, so he may run who reads it. For still the vision awaits its appointed time. It hastens to the end. It will not lie. If it seems slow, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. Behold, his soul is puffed up. It is not upright within him," referring to these Babylonians and those who are not following God's plan. "But the righteous shall live by his faith. Moreover, wine is a traitor, an arrogant man who is never at rest. His greed is as wide as Sheol. Like death, he has never enough. He gathers for himself all nations and collects as his own all peoples." So God is saying, I understand that someone more wicked is judging my people, and I'm using them, but they are not going to be victorious in the end. He says, if it seems slow, wait for it. Many times, we have a plan of what we want to happen, what we would like to see, God's justice just coming down and taking care of issues. This last week, there was a day that focused on what has happened in our country with abortion and how horrible it is that 46 million babies have been murdered from 1970 to 2016, and even more year after year since then. And as perhaps we seek to do as much as we can politically to influence laws to change, I'm sure that has been frustrating, and it frustrates me to think about the fact that there's still this rampant wickedness continuing, ongoing. And I'm sure that you've experienced injustice in your own life that doesn't appear to be going away quickly. Perhaps something with a child going astray, or difficulty in your children's lives, or perhaps in your own life at work, a struggle that just keeps going on, and you feel like this can't be just. You know, I'm trying to follow the Lord here, and yet I still continue to suffer. Or perhaps a great trial that's impacted your whole life, and you just feel like it's so hard to make it through that. And yet God's answer here is that one day justice will come. God will make it all right. And as someone who follows Christ, as someone who believes in what Christ has done, we are to be like the righteous that shall live by faith. That's the change that happens because of the gospel, because of what Jesus has done for us. We can have hope in the fact that one day everything is going to be made right. Now, that's not the only answer. As we progress and get later on into what Habakkuk is saying, he has more encouragement for us. But that is one of the things that we are to think about, is the fact that we can trust in God. We can believe that one day everything is going to be made right, no matter what difficulty you may be facing now. It continues in verse 6, "Shall not all these take up their taunt against him," talking about the Babylonians, "with scoffing and riddles for him, and say, 'Woe to him who heaps up what is not his own. For how long? And loads himself with pledges. Will not your debtors suddenly arise, and those awake who will make you tremble? Then you will be spoil for them. Because you have plundered many nations, all the remnant of the people shall plunder you. For the blood of man and violence to the earth, to cities and all who dwell in them.'" And continuing on through these verses in chapter 2, it just talks about how the judgment is going to come. Justice will happen, and it will be taken care of. God will save his people. And then we find in chapter 3 that God has always been faithful in the past. And this is how Habakkuk can respond at the end with the rejoicing that it's going to be taken care of. We read that earlier in our scripture reading, just how God has throughout the history of Israel, he has always taken care of his people. He has always judged those who judge them. There's reference to Egypt and chariots and how God has taken care of them in Midian. And it says in verse 13, "You went out for the salvation of your people, for the salvation of your anointed. You crushed the head of the house of the wicked." So God is going to take care of this injustice. He is going to save his people. And we can be confident of that. And God gives a song to Habakkuk. This chapter 3 is a song that the people of Judah could sing in response to all of God's goodness to them, even though at the time that it was written, they couldn't see it yet. There was going to be worse things happening from Habakkuk's day forward for a lot of years before they would be able to return to the land and rejoice in what God had done. But while they waited, they could still rejoice in the Lord. This last couple of weeks, I guess it was about 2 weeks ago, Ethan got sick with something that was worse than any of our other kids have had recently. He had some congestion symptoms and some fever, and it got kind of rough there, but he seemed to recover from the fever. But he seemed like he was getting over the issue, the sickness, and then all of a sudden he just stopped drinking and eating, and he wouldn't take anything. And that was, as a parent, very scary because, you know, we know that you can go a certain number of days without food, but it's a very short time you can go without drinking anything. And so we called the doctor and got some suggestions, and it turned out that he had an ear infection, and he was able to get some medicine it took a few days, and it was pretty scary to wait for that time for that to come. And we definitely were praying a lot more for him than we usually do. We try to pray consistently for him, but this was just a constant thing. Just, Lord, please help him to drink again, because he's not going to be able to go much longer without drinking, without serious implications. And as I was thinking about that, it reminded me of how the verses in Philippians that talk about not being anxious for anything, but by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, letting our requests be made known to God, and then he will give peace in that time. And that was probably my biggest struggle during that time, was just being able to have peace and work on the things that I knew I needed to do, apart from just the focus on, you know, Ethan's got this really bad sickness. I really hope that he can get over it. So I'm sure that many of you have faced difficulties, whether something like that or something that's way more long-term than that. You know, looking back, it seems like, well, you know, he stopped drinking for a day or two. That's not that big of a deal now, to think about it. But it was a very big burden at the time. And a lot of times we can look at the difficulties that we face in life and get very focused on them. And it's very hard to take our focus and to just say, to trust in God. Just say, you know, I trust in the Lord. He's going to be able to get me through this. And maybe you don't get through it while you're in this life. Maybe that's the significance of the trial or difficulty that you're facing. Or perhaps it is some kind of injustice that in your lifetime you won't see that go away. But no matter how big or how small, how long-term or short-term the difficulty that you face is, we can be confident that God is going to take care of it. God is going to deliver us one day to be with him if we've trusted in Christ. And that can be our confidence. It doesn't necessarily take away the pain or take away the difficulty of that suffering. But we can trust in the Lord and we can still have peace in the midst of difficulty, no matter how great or small that difficulty is. We need to focus on God. That's what God did in these passages, these verses that he gave to Habakkuk. He took the focus off of Habakkuk saying, you know, I've got these problems. I don't understand how this evil and this injustice can just keep going on and on. And God said, take a step back and realize that I have a much bigger plan going on and that I am accomplishing my plan and nothing can stop it. And as someone who is my child, as my righteous one, you need to live by faith. You need to trust in me and realize that because God is so great and because he is accomplishing his plan, we can actually trust him. And we don't have to be in turmoil through the difficulties that we face. And so the right response that we have, we can find in verse 18 of chapter 3, where Habakkuk says, "Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation." In the first part here, he says, "I will rejoice in the Lord." We can rejoice in the personal relationship that we have with God. It's not just that we have a God that we worship who's distant. The name used here at the end, probably in your Bible, you'll see that Lord is all capitalized there. The first time this name appears is in Genesis 2, when God is forming man from the dust of the ground. So the beginning of Genesis 1, uses the name for God that talks about his power and his control over all things, his sovereignty. He's great. And we see that through creation. God creates everything. But then Genesis 2 switches to a much more personal level. And added to that name of God's power is this name that is used for a relationship with him. In Psalm 19, you see that switch as it talks about the heavens declaring the glory of God. That's the big, powerful God who's in control of everything. But then about the middle point, it switches to saying the law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. And those verses following use the name for God that just is used for his personal relationship. And so Habakkuk here has the opportunity to rejoice in the Lord and that personal relationship that he has with him as he meditates on what God has done. You see earlier in chapter 3, he sees the things that God has done for him personally. As the people of Israel, God has delivered them time and time again. from destruction. And you know that we also experience that in our lives as we get to know God better, as we read His Word and hopefully meditate on what we learn and continue to hear things taught about Him, continue to get to know Him better through His Word. And even as we see creation and the blessings that God gives us, we can rejoice in Him even in the midst of difficulty. It can be easy to focus on our circumstances and not on the person who is walking through it with us and the fact that He is leading us through the circumstance, and we can focus on Him because of that. He then says, I will take joy in the God of my salvation. And it's not just the fact that we have a relationship with God. That's wonderful. It's amazing to be able to have a relationship with the God of the universe and be able to talk with Him and learn about Him and hear what He wants to teach us from His Word and sing praise to Him. But it's also wonderful to have the confidence that He is saving us. We often think of salvation as the moment where we ask Christ to save us from our sins. And that is true. That's an amazing thing. There's so many passages that talk about the amazing work that God does in salvation, even leading up to that point, Him choosing us before the foundation of the world, or the fact that He has poured out His blessings on us. Pastor's been talking about that from Ephesians. And that is such an encouraging thing to think about. But even the fact that God is doing a work in us, a saving work over time too. He's sanctifying us. That's typically what we call it, is sanctification. That God is continuously helping us to grow closer to Him. And we can rejoice in the fact that God is saving us in that way as well. Even in the difficult times that we face, when we don't know what's going to happen next, and we don't know if things are going to work out as we might hope that they would, we can be confident that God is going to do that work to help us to become more like Christ. We're pretty familiar with Romans 8, 28, and what it says there is that the things that come into our life that are difficult help us to become more like Christ. They are sanctifying us. It says, we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good. And what is that good? It says, for those who are called according to His purpose. For those whom He foreknew, He also predestined to be conformed to the image of His Son, in order that He might be the firstborn among many brothers. So, the salvation of our God is His work in us, not just at the moment that we are saved, but also through the rest of our lives, sanctifying us, making us more like Christ. And we can rejoice in that. Even as we face difficult times, the fact that God is accomplishing His plan, not just for the world and not just for the time in history that we are in, or maybe for our nation or that kind of thing, but God is accomplishing His plan in each one of our lives, in each one of our personal lives and walks with Him. He's using the difficulties and the circumstances we face to help us become more like Him. And so we can take joy in God and the salvation that He is working. And He's doing the same thing in those around us, as perhaps sometimes our suffering comes from watching others suffer. And we see the difficulties that they face. We can also have confidence that God is doing that work in the lives of others. Perhaps a picture for us of that is when we think of a bride and groom on their wedding day. Often we think of the excitement and the joy that they have. And I don't know how many weddings you've been to or been involved in, but it seems like there's always a number of things that don't go as planned, as people expect that they would or want them to go. And yet, it doesn't seem, for the most part, occasionally perhaps it gets a little stressful for the bride and groom, but it doesn't seem like it affects the bride and groom too much. They're still happy and excited about the wedding, and as long as they get married, it works out pretty great. And so they're just so focused on each other and the relationship they have with each other that whatever circumstances are going on around them don't really affect them very much. And that's perhaps in a small way a picture of what it should be like for us. And this is difficult. The circumstances that we face in life are hard, and they don't just disappear because we're excited about God. But if our relationship with God continues to grow and we get to know Him better and we know Him more, then hopefully it becomes a little bit like the bride and groom on their wedding day that are just so excited about getting married that it doesn't matter how many things go wrong around them, whatever mishaps may happen with the ring bearer and the flower girls or whatever other kinds of things might go on. As long as they end up getting married, that's great. That's what they're looking forward to, is the relationship with each other. And so in our lives, hopefully as we go through difficult circumstances, we can get to know God so well that we can continue to rejoice in Him and grow in that relationship and rejoice in the salvation that He has given to us. But God also gives us more hope. Habakkuk has gone through all kinds of discussion here with the Lord about the difficulties that he's facing and how he just doesn't understand this injustice and how this destruction could happen. But God gives him even more hope as he thinks about who God is and what he does for him. So in verse 19, we can see that as we rely on God through difficulty, God gives us the strength that we need. Verse 19 says, God the Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on my high places. So we see here that God, the relationship with God, is something that keeps him strong through difficulty. But it doesn't stop there. God also provides strength for him. So often when we face a trial, we can start out by thinking, well, I'm just going to get through this. I know maybe you know how long it will be, or you think you know how long it's going to be. And so you just try to get through it. Maybe you're one of those people that's just tough and you can make it through. But God says, no, you need to depend on me. I saved you. I am doing a saving work in you, making you more like Jesus. I need you to depend on me. And then God responds by giving strength. So here, Habakkuk experiences that. He gets to receive strength from the Lord to be able to understand that even though in the times of difficulty, he may not understand exactly what's going on, God is going to give him the strength that he needs to get through this difficult circumstance. God, the one who is in charge of everything, who is sovereign over the whole world, is the one who provides the strength that he needs. And that's plenty of strength. That's all that we could ask for. God says that he pours out his grace on believers. For it says, if he could save us, then how could he not take care of every need that we have going through difficulties that we may face in this life? And so we can be dependent on the Lord for strength. And he uses this picture too, that even though we think, well, strength might be all that we need, he also gives a picture of the stability that God provides for him. It says, he makes my feet like the deer's. I don't know how many of you hunt. I've never had the opportunity to go out and hunt. The one time that I almost did, I was a little bit too young, and so my dad said, you know, we're going out with some cousins in Georgia. He said, well, you're a little too young to go. So I was really bummed about that my older brother got to go. But if you've ever been out and even watching other animals that are similar to deer, it's amazing how they can just walk over all kinds of ground, and it seems like they don't trip. Sometimes we refer to small children like this. We say, oh, he's like a mountain goat or something. He can just get up anything. He can climb up wherever he wants to. But God here is giving a picture here of the stability that we can have, the confidence that we can have, that God is going to provide everything that we need, and that he's going to help us get through the circumstance. So a lot of times our prayer might focus on wanting to be able to get through the circumstance and just be done with it. But God says, no, I'm going to give you the strength that you need, and I'm also going to give you the stability to get through it. So the guidance as to where you have to step, as it were, to get through this circumstance. So maybe you have to make decisions in that circumstance, or maybe you just don't know how you're going to make it through. But God provides each step of the way the encouragement and the guidance that you need, making your feet like the deer's. And then finally, God also provides victory. It says he makes me tread on my high places. God gives confidence that we need to be able to get through these difficult times. and God can help us. It says that treading on the high places, that idea of just being in victory over one's enemies, that you don't have to face this difficulty as a defeated person, but God is going to give you the strength that you need to get through. Some of you may be familiar with a book called 828. It's a story of a couple that got married after the husband was in a very serious car accident. He was paralyzed, and he was able to start talking a little bit. It's very difficult still for him to talk. And so they made the decision that if he would be able to communicate with her, they already knew each other. They were pretty much to the point of getting engaged when the car accident occurred. And they made the decision to go ahead and get engaged and then get married once they knew that they would be able to communicate, because they knew that would be a very important part of being able to have a relationship together. But a few years after the car accident and through this, Larissa Murphy, the lady who married Ian, said this, talking about Philippians 4:11 through 13, which say, "Not that I'm speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me." And this is what Larissa writes, thinking about these verses. "One thread of consistency over the past nearly 6 years since Ian's accident is the secret that Paul spoke of, that secret of being content. For me, watching Ian, contentment has often felt elusive and like it was always two steps ahead, never allowing me to catch up. Soon after Ian's accident, I often deceived myself into thinking that situational changes would move me up a few on the contentment scale. But as our situation continued in pain, God was teaching me, little by little, what this secret means. I didn't know contentment in my prosperity. Contentment then meant health and ease, not God. God has not given us an indication that Ian will be fully healed here, which means that we have needed to enlist ourselves in our suffering. We still pray for complete healing, but we also pray for strength to endure a lifelong disability. We are learning that contentment is produced as we obey and act on his promises. Like the one mentioned above, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Recently, this has meant believing I can do all things when I'm woken up by the sound of Ian getting sick to his stomach at 4 a.m. He can't move his body fast enough to not choke, and so my body and mind must jolt from my dreams and spend the next hour cleaning up a man who is too tired and sick to hold his own head up. Yet somehow, in a moment so mysterious that it must be of God, I am filled with peace in the quiet of our house, throwing filthy bedding down the laundry chute. And I think that it's in those tiny moments of serving and obeying that contentment abounds. Often they are just that, tiny and passing, but they must be building toward a greater joy." As she's experienced this trial in her life and seen her husband suffer in many ways that we don't experience, although many of us have trials and difficulties in our lives, she has taken the opportunity to realize that contentment is not about, as she said, about health and ease. And so often we think that. We think that if my life is easy, then I can be content. If things aren't difficult today, then I'm feeling great. I'm so happy. But many times we don't realize that our contentment comes from our relationship with God. And that's the message of Habakkuk as a whole, is that our strength through difficulty has to come from our relationship with God. It's not something that just happens because God blesses us with health or God blesses us with making our lives easy for a period of time. We have to get to know him and find that joy in him. Perhaps today you're not going through a period of difficulty. You don't feel like things are that bad. Things are great and you're not sick and you don't have struggles at work at the moment or at home. But God has the gift to you of himself still. You can have that relationship with him. And when you do face difficulty, if you know him better, then you will be prepared to go through that time of difficulty. But probably for most of us, there's at least some suffering, some trial or some difficulty that we face, perhaps a difficult decision or a family member who is walking away from the Lord and discouragement from that, or perhaps just another loved one who is suffering, and that's difficult for you to see. There are so many different ways that we have difficulty in our lives. And God gives us an answer, just like he gave to Habakkuk, that we can find our strength in him. He says that if everything else is going wrong, if there's no fruit on the trees, there's no cattle in the stall, there's no produce from the olive tree, you know, in our lives, that would be like if there's no food in the pantry, or there's nothing for us to be able to hope that all of our provisions are going to be there the next day, which would be pretty extreme in our circumstances. Basically, he's saying, if everything goes wrong, we can still hope in God, and we can still have confidence and confident faith that he is going to get us through. He's going to save us in the end. We have hope for the future, and he's also going to give us joy in the midst of the trial if we are dependent on him. And so hopefully, as you think through Habakkuk and perhaps read back through it, it's not a long book. It's pretty easy to read through in just a few minutes. That will be an encouragement to you that God is there and he is providing for his people in the midst of whatever difficulties you may face. And we also want to think, too, about the bigger picture in the Bible of where Habakkuk fits. There's the hope that is offered that God is working out his plan of salvation throughout all of history. And that should give us hope even in the small things, even in the small difficulties in our lives. The fact that Habakkuk was looking forward to the fact that one day a Messiah would come and deliver God's people. And we can look back to what Christ has already done and the fact that he's coming again and he is going to receive us to him at that time. And so that can give us hope as well in the midst of difficulty. So I hope this week, as you think about maybe the things that you're already going through, or as you encounter difficult situations, or in the coming months and throughout this year, that you will look to God, that you will look to him for hope, because he truly is the only one who can give us hope in the midst of whatever difficulties we face. And our relationship with him is really the place that we should go when we face difficulties. We should go to him first and ask him for the strength and stability that we need. Let's go ahead and pray.